What do you think about Afghanistan, everybody? Are you shocked by this report that says that we were misled by U.S. officials? What do you think about that? Call me at 773-763-9278, 773-763-WCPT. Do you think we're there to get some of their mineral wealth? $1 to $3 trillion of mineral wealth has been untapped in Afghanistan. They don't know how to quite get to it. Is that why we're there? Or are we there for democracy? Or something else? I don't know. I want to know what you think. We've got Monique Salhab from Veterans for Peace. These are all veterans. Matthew Ho, Marine Corps, Iraq vet. Many of you remember when he resigned his State Department appointment as a political officer in Afghanistan over the escalation of the war by President Obama. He's now a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy, Michael McPherson, past president of Veterans for Peace. Let's talk about this today. Welcome everyone to the show, Lady B. Let's bring them up. Michael McPherson, Matthew Ho, and Monique Salhab. How are you both, everybody? How are all three of you today?
Good morning, Cynthia. Thank you for having us on the show.
Of course, of course. You know you have a home here. Tell me your reaction, Monique, first, you, to this, to these Afghanistan papers, as they're being called.
To be honest, I'm not surprised. I think, it's an overwhelming amount of information that's been published, and obviously it's going to take some time to digest. But for me personally, I'm not surprised. I honestly believed that the U.S. was pretty much lying from the beginning. I did not deploy to Afghanistan. I deployed to Iraq, but I did not believe in either of the wars. And I think that, again, this is just proof to the American people and the public of the complete incompetency of how U.S. military and U.S. politicians utilize the military for its purposes to destroy other countries.
Wow. What do you make of this Pew poll that says that really 64% of veterans say that the war in Iraq was not worth fighting? And similar numbers for Afghanistan. I mean, it's really stunning because we don't hear about those studies at all, of those polls.
Exactly.
Is that what you find when you speak with your fellow veterans?
Definitely, especially those who are involved in the peace and social justice movement, recognizing that, you know, our roles in the military and in war, having seen the complete dehumanization of men, women, children, old people, the complete destruction of a country, and also to then have to come home and look at what's happening here in our own communities, and to see that a lot of what's happening in other countries is happening here. I mean, just your announcement a few minutes ago about what was going on in Jersey City, you know, that level of violence happening in a U.S. country, is that's been happening for decades, and so the war that we bring to other countries is happening here in our own communities.
Matthew Ho, I mean, you sounded the alarm in a most public way, and when you resigned from this lofty position at the State Department as a political officer, what do you make of this information that, you know, this Washington Post report that says, no, the American public have been misled about Afghanistan? What do you make of this?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Always wonderful hearing your voice.
Yeah, it's so nice to be on. I don't think most people were, you know, many people were shocked. The only people I've seen express shock or outrage, and I think it's faux shock and outrage, has been some politicians who, you know, are acting like they'd never heard that there was any bad news coming out of Afghanistan before. You know, particularly politicians like Senator Blumenthal or Senator Gillibrand, who are on the Senate Armed Services Committee, who should know better. You know, and just to stay on the congressional theme for a second, even as these various members of Congress are saying how outrageous this is and how there should be hearings and this level of deceit and lying needs to come to an end and needs to be addressed, this week they are also going to vote on the Pentagon authorization bill, which is $783 billion, about $50 billion more than the president even asked for. So, you know, you get very frustrated with this because you see now there is a smoking gun, if you will, that not just a few people who were responsible for running the Afghan war were, systematically and consistently lying about the war, but it's hundreds of people that are within these papers that the Post released, you know, thousands of pages and hundreds of people. So, you know, you kind of want to throw your hands up in the air because, you know, the feeling is that nothing is going to change, that this information has been out there for a long time. Most people are familiar with the fact of how the United States government and the military has lied, not just about the Afghan war, but, you know, about the Iraq war, about Libya, about Syria, you know, going back, of course, Vietnam. So I think there's a frustration level, but we can't let that get to us, to the point that we disengage from any processes we're involved in to try and make change and try and end these wars. And I will say that the one thing I will also say is that, you know, I get asked a lot, or not so much often as much now as say, you know, 10 years ago, when President Obama was sending, you know, 70,000 troops to Afghanistan, what's the differences and similarities between Afghanistan and Iraq? And I used to fall into that trap of trying to compare the two nations. And then finally I realized that that's a silly thing to say because none of that matters. The only thing that matters is that the U.S. military is there waging war, and the same results are going to happen. And the same thing can be said about whether or not U.S. government officials and U.S. military officials are telling us the truth about these wars. They've never told us the truth about these wars. So I think that's another reason why people are not so shocked. And if there's any reason to be shocked, it would be that the Washington Post did publish these papers, because the Post and other big media like New York Times or, say, CNN, they have done incredibly poor adversarial journalism about these wars. So it's kind of shocking to see that they did this, but I'm glad it's out there, and you know, I'm glad giving an opportunity for people, you know, like yourself and people in Chicago to read through it and, you know, understand better, not just about the Afghan war, but about what our government and our military is really like.
Michael McPherson, your reaction to this report.
Thank you for having me on. I want to also say hello to Matt and Malik. It's good hearing y'all's voices this morning. Like both of them, it's not surprising at all. I guess mostly I'm just sad at it being so, not that we brought to light, but just reading it, things that we've been talking about, the three of us within Veterans for Peace and trying to get the country to see. And I hearken back to a 2009 convention that we had in College Park, Maryland, where we had a Afghan woman who was, and I'm pretty sure she still is, with the Revolutionary Association of Women of Afghanistan. And if people were to Google RAWA, which is RAWA, that's the acronym for the name, Veterans for Peace 2009 Convention, you'll find on their website her speech. And a lot of what is in this report in the paper, Washington Post, she was saying then. So the information was out there, and as Matt said, if the media was really trying to find the answer instead of just using what the government was telling, being an echo chamber for the government, there were ways to find out what was really going on, especially from the Afghan people themselves. Even this report that the Lessons Learned staff, they interviewed more than 600 people, but they only interviewed 20 Afghans. That's an example of the disrespect that we as a nation have for the people that we go and really kill. You want to know what's going on in the country and whether something's succeeding or not, but you talk to 580 Americans and some other, all of them non-Americans, some of them with NATO allies from London and Brussels and Berlin, but you don't talk to the people you're supposedly trying to save. And another example of the disrespect and how things were framed is we're always, even in a report this morning about a bombing that took place there in Afghanistan, they've always said that the United States is trying to protect the Afghan people, but the Taliban are the Afghan people as well. They're not some foreign invader. We're the ones that they're invader. That's easy to see, you know. So the media itself, how it reports, how it framed things, supported what the U.S. government was saying. So I was just sad as I read through it, you know, and I just want to give one other example of the disrespect and something that really saddened me, but this shows that the people on the ground, they were saying how they don't know who the enemy is and who the allies are, but at the same time, what is your own frame of mind. So one quote said, bad news was often stifled. There was more freedom to share bad news if it was small. We're running over kids with MRAPs, which is an armored vehicle, because those things could be changed with policy directives. So running over kids is small. I mean, really? So that's the mindset that you have, that running over kids is small. And then the big questions are, of course, this is a big question. You know, what are we doing here? Who is the enemy? But running over kids is exactly showing that you're not being effective and that you can't possibly be winning the hearts and minds of the people. Because if you run over my grandson, I'm going to maybe pick up a weapon and I'm for peace. But you just ran over my grandson. Come on.
You know, we've got to talk about this, everybody. We've got to talk about who we are, really, and where we are going. How do you feel 18 years later to be told in this explosive report from the Washington Post that U.S. officials have not been telling you the truth about Afghanistan? And what about the human toll? When we come back, we will speak with these veterans about their struggles, their personal struggles, the struggles that we see veterans dealing with every day. They're 7% of the population, and yet they're 11% of the homeless population. Something's going on, everybody. And so many of them, according to this Pew Research poll, almost two-thirds of them say, we shouldn't have been in Afghanistan and Iraq. You don't even hear that. Wow. And even President Trump said, you got to get out of there. Syria and Afghanistan, we have no business there. Whether you're on the right or the left, you want to be correct. Really. And is it the mineral wealth? Is that the reason we're there? $1 to $3 trillion of untapped mineral wealth? I mean, look, North Korea has twice that, like $6 trillion of mineral wealth. I mean, are we looking for democracy or are we digging for gold? I don't know. Let me know. It's 773-763. WCPT 773-763-9278. Oh, the Santita Jackson Show. December 21st cannot come quickly enough. We're going to have a party, everybody. Christmas party at 930 East 50th Street from 6 to 10. You don't want to miss it. It's family friendly. Bring your own beverages, but we'll have mimosas. And fun and games for the kids, too. Family parties, that's what we do. More of the Santita Jackson Show on WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station. Back in a minute.
WCPT 820, Chicago's progressive talk, where facts matter.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Santita Jackson Show. We're talking about Afghanistan. These explosive Afghanistan papers from the Washington Post. They say that U.S. officials have misled the American public about this war for 18 years, from George W. Bush to Barack Obama to President Trump now. So is this really, you know, Matthew Ho? I mean, you have so much experience, and, you know, many people hailed you as a hero, and other people said, well, I don't know why this man who's been appointed to the State Department as a political officer, I don't know why this proud Marine would go against all of that and resign. I mean, why did you do that?
You know, a lot of the reasons why I resigned are in those papers or in the reports, because it's what I saw. But
do you feel vindicated at all? Do you feel vindicated at all?
No, because there's no joy or sense of fulfillment in saying I told you so. You know, and I echo Michael's, you know, and comments about the sadness. You know that and there's just so much, you know, the suffering that has occurred in this war. Especially among the Afghans, but also too here at home. You know, anyone who has had to deal with family members of those who've been killed over there, or those who have taken their own lives after coming home, anyone who's been involved, you know, in the veterans community and seen how this war has destroyed lives, let alone been there and seen what it's done to the Afghan people. There is no sense of, as I said, joy or fulfillment in saying I told you so. I think, when I look back on it, and to echo kind of what I said earlier, you know, when I resigned, my reasons were because what I saw in Afghanistan was the same thing I had seen in Iraq. And what I saw with the Obama administration was the same thing I had seen with the Bush administration. And there was no differences, that the war was equally as immoral, equally corrupt, unjustified, illegal, and also unwinnable, and only benefiting a few. You know, it's interesting you're bringing up the issue of lithium, because there are those rare earth minerals that are present in Afghanistan. And you can see how something like that would influence someone like Donald Trump. So I would expect that if there ever is, say, a peace deal in Afghanistan, it would be contingent on the United States having some type of preferred access to those rare earth minerals, so that Donald Trump could say that he brought about the end of the war, as well as claiming it as a commercial success. Just like what he's done in Syria, where he said we were going to pull out of Syria, but we were going to keep the oil. And we never ended up pulling out of Syria anyway. I encourage people to read through the documents. And then I also encourage people to, read about these other wars, as well as to push our elected officials to actually do something and try and hold people accountable. I know probably a lot of people are scoffing when they hear that, but that's, you know, that is something that needs to be done. I'll also say that one of the things, whenever people ask me about the Iraq or Afghan war, which books to read, I always recommend books that are about the Vietnam War. Because if you understand the Vietnam War, you understand the U.S. government and the U.S. military, you'll understand what's happening now.
Monique, what about this human toll? And I open this up to all of you. What about the human toll? Because you and Matthew have been very, very courageous in coming forward with the struggles, the personal struggles that you've had. And so, and you, Matthew, and Michael have talked about the struggles of your fellow veterans.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the fact is that, you know, when a soldier deploys, it's the effects of that deployment are not just felt within perhaps the soldier's immediate family, but you're looking at this domino effect of the family, friends, and community. And then when the soldier returns, the effects of that again on not only the soldier, but the family and community and everyone that that individual, that veteran comes in contact with. And so, you know, the human toll is not just about the soldier, but it's about the individuals that are impacted, you know, the people in Afghanistan, the people in Iraq, in Syria, in Yemen, everyone who's impacted by the fact that the United States goes into countries and literally destroys communities, families, people, that human toll. And, you know, you're asking someone to strip away their moral self, basically, to kill another human being and then come back and step back into what's so-called normal society and live a life. And you know, what to me, that's a level of insanity that has absolutely made no sense to me. And, you know, and to speak to the reality is that the United States does not go into countries unless there is some long-term reason, in the sense of, you know, I think what Matthew stated about Afghanistan is definitely on point. I mean, there is a reason that we're there, and I believe that from the beginning, just as I believed it with Iraq and other countries that we're in. And so here we are 17, 18 years later, and, you know, Michael, myself, Matthew, and many, many other veterans, you know, we're still talking about the wars. We're still, you know, living our lives as best as possible, and we're still trying to basically speak the truth about the harm of these wars.
Michael McPherson, your comment quickly. I want to go to the callers. I want them to be heard as well, because Triple T just sent me a text. He said, honor and respect to our veterans. I regret that we've placed headless leaders over our proud, loyal servicemen and women. Hopefully, the nation will select a commander-in-chief who will pierce the wall of deception and restore honor. We know only one candidate is full-throated for peace, Tulsi Gabbard. What do you think about that? That's from Triple T. What do you think about that, Michael McPherson?
I'm not real optimistic about there being a president who's going to pierce this veil of lying.
Why not?
Well, first of all, the people who are running, none of them really talked in that manner, except for Tulsi to the degree that she has. But a big question has to be asked. And when we start talking more about why we're there, we have to talk about U.S. imperialism. We have to talk about U.S. empire. And until we are really talking about that, because that's a framework as to why the military, why we act the way we do when we go to places. You know, as far as the resources, I'm going to say in Afghanistan, I'm not sure that was the primary reason. And one of the reasons I say that is because, you know, supposedly we were attacked by Al-Qaeda, and I knew at the time, I was in New York, I actually worked there when we were attacked. So I remember the day very well. And I got down on my knees and I prayed that our response would not be what it is, because I knew it would be that way, because I'm very familiar with what we do in the world. And of course, the politics of it, if you're president of this country, and the kind of violence that we use here at home, as Monique was talking about, is one of the reasons is because we see violence as a way to solve problems. So whoever is president in a political sense is going to feel so much pressure, as Bush did, plus he believes it himself, that he thought he had to go into Iraq with U.S. military force instead of taking time to find out, Afghanistan, instead of taking time to find out what really happened, so that we can, as a nation and as a world, really address the real issues. But then he changed his mind and went to Iraq. So that makes me wonder if the reason, you know, if there was really some thought-out reason to go to Afghanistan in the first place. But let me say this so we can go on to the callers. I have a list of reasons why I think we're in Afghanistan, But they're the same reasons why we're wherever we are. Because, and I'll go through that list later, but I do want to say this. Imperial powers act a particular way. They never concede ground. When an imperial power goes into a place, it doesn't leave until it's forced to. Or if it has a government and is there that pays homage to the imperial power. That is just not the United States. That's any imperial power. So if you remember that rule about imperialism and empire, then you'll start to understand why the United States acts the way that it does around the world.
Let me go to Chris from Wheaton. Chris, what's on your mind?
Oh, hello, Ms. Anita.
Good morning, Chris.
You know, as always, I appreciate the discussion, and I did miss some of the other cohorts of Mr. Ho, but Mr. Ho, I appreciate your heroism and your honesty in addressing the reality of the experience of the soldier in these foreign wars. You know, my whole thing is, and it always has been, it's always been about the money, and it always will be about the money. And, you know, anyone who tries to claim that it's about any type of American interest internationally would be totally missing the boat, because in 1979, I believe it was December of 1979, when the Russians invaded Afghanistan, and the CIA went and made good friends with a guy named Osama bin Laden and the Mujahideen, the Holy Warriors, who we supported with weapons and money. Well, they continued to fight against the Russians on our behalf and, you know, gave the Russians their biggest international defeat on the world stage, who then turned around and used those very same weapons upon us when we returned in 2001, or whatever. Yeah, it was 2001. It's just, you know, we got Betsy DeVos as our education secretary. Her brother made millions and millions of dollars working for Blackwater Inc. as a mercenary. So we had soldiers out there risking their lives while there was people making money, getting paid to kill. So I appreciate bringing up the rare earth element aspect of it, because all of these things are for a profit. For whom, I'm not sure, because I'm not connected to that part of society. But there's money to be made. Endless war is absolutely a for-profit business. It's a tragedy. There's millions of lives in Iraq, Afghanistan, all across the world who've been murdered in cold blood to make people money. It hurts my heart. It makes me ashamed of my country, and I love the people of my country. I love my neighbors and everyone in this country, but I can't stand by evil deeds like that. So I just think there's a lot of power in being honest. The truth will set us free, but that truth is real ugly. And we're going to have a real moment of reflection about that, especially considering that there's a deep irony in destroying the opium fields in Afghanistan, where much of the world's heroin came from. And now the world's heroin is coming from Chinese labs in the form of fentanyl. And it's killing far more people than Afghan heroin ever did. And so there's so many tendrils to this and so many different aspects that have been overlooked either by choice or just by lack of knowledge, that there's death all around this. And, you know, I just bind up that spirit of death around this, and we need to come to grips with all of this and get it handled. So I appreciate the discussion, though. You guys are really having a really important discussion, and I appreciate it. So
we appreciate
your comments off the air.
Absolutely. We appreciate you. Let me go to Triple T from the South Side. Triple T, what's on your mind?
Good morning again. I just reflect on 18 years. That means next year sometime, there's a strong possibility that our service personnel will be injected into that conflict that was going on before they were even born. Mm-hmm. At some point, the American people have to wake up. We have to reflect. General Smedley Butler said it a long time ago, the war's a racket, and we're the tools of people who are not concerned with the well-being of other people. They're concerned with the dollar bottom line. And that's not a secret. The current president said the right things. And when he tried to pull out of Syria, there was a whole lot of noise from both sides of the aisle.
Absolutely.
That's supposed to wake us up. And that's why I keep saying it's not a duopoly. It's a one-headed monster with two arms. And it's strangling mankind with the left hand and the right hand. And it has to be someone who's anti-establishment. And there's only one candidate who's pushing that line. And that's where we have to start. Everybody have a great day.
Blessings to you, Triple T. Matthew, how can we have a discussion about, you know, about what's really driving all of this? I mean, because this has been very, very painful to read. I can only imagine what our parents, you know, experienced with the Pentagon Papers, and that was a far more, if I could say, it was a far more innocent time, because I think the '60s and the '70s just really delivered so many hard, cold truths to America. I don't think we've been the same ever since that time. Matthew, what can we do to move the needle? I mean, because, you know, what you did, what all of you do, Monique and Michael, first of all, you're veterans standing for peace, and you're standing for a lot of your fellow veterans who can't stand for themselves as they struggle when they come back. As you, Matthew, you have spoken, all of you have spoken so eloquently about moral injury. Why don't you speak to that first, moral injury?
Yes, thanks, Santita, for letting me speak about that. And thank you to Chris for the kind words. You know, moral injury is it's becoming a recognized diagnosis. I think most people would say it's guilt, but it's much deeper, much more. It much deals with spiritual and religious issues, moral values at a very core and existential level. And moral injury is basically you have done something that transgresses your values, or you fail to do something that transgresses your values. It's also, moral injury can also be something done to you, where you are betrayed by someone or something you put trust in. So with these papers, a moral injury will occur from those people who have gone and fought in Afghanistan, you know, took part in the killing over there, thought what they were doing was somehow making the United States safer, or that they were contributing to an effort that would be successful, and then they find out that's not the case. To your point about the Pentagon Papers, that what happened shortly after Pentagon Papers was, of course, Watergate. And I think, you know, you're completely correct, Santita, because the United States has not been the same since then. The level of trust in government has, and not just in the government, but in all institutions of the government, ironically, not the military, though, because the military continues to be the most respected institution in the U.S. I think what we need to do is, you know, for many of us, it's continuing to do the things we've been doing, using this as evidence and a cudgel. But we also know, too, that facts don't make much of a difference in changing people's minds. And I think it comes down to, as a friend of mine reminded me yesterday, it comes down to building relationships. And I think that somehow those of us who understand Afghanistan, understand Iraq, Syria, Yemen, you know, all these places that we are killing people in for whatever purposes, and achieving consequences that are really only benefiting the weapons companies and the terrorist group because it feeds into their recruiting, we need to forge relationships with those outside the anti-war and peace community. I know both Monique and Michael are very big on this, but finding allies, because I think we have to continue to tie it back to, as I said at the beginning, you know, these papers come out showing just persistent, you know, and systematic lying, institutional lying on behalf of the military about this war, and it's happened in all the other wars, and yet the Congress is going to turn around and give them $783 billion. But anything for the people of the United States that we want to have happen, healthcare, schools, better roads, we're asked, how are we going to pay for that? So I think it's a question of building alliances and relationships with people and helping them understand how these wars impact them in order to try and bring about an end to them.
Monique, what do you want people to know?
Oh, gosh, that's a huge question.
Well, you're a big woman. You can give us some answers, because I think that the reason we keep getting here, Monique and Matthew and Michael, the three M's, I love it. I don't think we're asking the big questions, because, you know, look, my mother said, you know what, it occurred to her, and this was someone who was a staunch peace activist. She said, you know, my parents' route to the middle class, albeit the lower middle class, was through the military. And as I was doing some reading in preparation for the show, there was a New York Times article in which they said, you know, part of Trump's appeal to the military is his call for the end to endless wars, interestingly enough, right? This is an article that just came out. I think we're not asking the big questions. I think we're too locked up in Democratic and Republican politics and the right and the left instead of that which is correct.
Mm-hmm. That is exactly it, right? You know, the distractions. I like to say that the man who is in the White House at the moment, and a lot of these public figures in politics, whether they're on the left or the right, they're like magicians, because they're waving their hands around and talking, and ultimately what's going on is the reality is what's happening are the things that we do not see. And, you know, I mean, it goes to what Matthew mentioned about just trying to educate and have and build relationships, right? I mean, one of the things that I know that I can do in my community is that as I'm talking to people, is really making those connections of, you know, as Matthew mentioned, about the money. Talking about, here's the big picture of money being spent. And here's what's happening in our communities with programs that are being defunded, with education and healthcare, and tying that in so that people actually are able to get a picture. Because ultimately, whether you're you know, an independent or a Democrat or Republican or whatever party you care to put yourself in, ultimately, what it comes down to is, how am I going to pay my bills today? And if the impact of how I'm going to pay my bills today and the education of my kids, and whether I have health care or not, whether I can go get, you know, services through a program, it comes down to the continued funding of war, then I have to eventually ask myself, well, why are we spending so much money on war? And I do want to add in about, you know, when I say our kids, when I say, you know, our kids in education, we've got to look at how the military is preying on our kids in public education, how, you know, recruiters have free access to our kids. They can walk into any public school and get the records of our children. A lot of parents don't realize that. And to look at how strategically on all fronts, the U.S. military and politicians are consistently looking at, you know, how do we continue to fight these wars and have troops that we can use as fodder, basically, to keep the U.S. military going. And it starts with our children.
Well, you know, when I'm going to be going on Facebook Live just in a couple of minutes, actually in about 5 minutes, to talk about this and to field questions from everybody who are watching us right now. And I've got to give away everybody. Oh, I've got to do this very quickly. That's right. And if you can stay with me, Monique, or Matthew, or Michael, that would be great. Santita Jackson and friends, everybody. Remember, December 21st, we've got our Christmas party at 930 East 50th Street, Rainbow Bush headquarters. It's going to be great. We're giving away $50 gift certificates to Dino's Italian Restaurant and Pizzeria, now celebrating over 50 years in business with the same family recipes that have made them successful over half a century. Dino's will do catering at the restaurant, at home, or office for all your holiday parties. Enjoy homemade lasagna, meatballs, pastas, and don't forget their famous pizza. Dino's is located at 7004 West Higgins, two blocks east of Harlem in Chicago. For carryout or delivery, please call Dino's at 773-763-4077. Contests running on WCPT 820 are open to listeners 18 years or older, residents of the greater Chicagoland, Northwest Indiana area. One entry per person, one winner per household. Void where prohibited by law. Listeners may only win or qualify to win once every 30 days. Complete rules are available on our website at WCPT820.com. I'll see you on Santina Jackson and Friends in just a few minutes. We're going to talk about war and peace and what our priorities should be. Indeed, that is what Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King talked about in his A Time to Speak Out speech, April 4th, 1967. You know, you can't do both. We're going to have to make a decision about our infrastructure or someone else's destruction, if you will. And you know, you can only win by addition, not by subtraction. You win by building, not by destroying. Let's start with these troops, everybody. We need to give them some love. Bring them home. I'm Santina Jackson. God bless you. WCPT 820.